Pickaxe.
Hello, my friend. My name's Sean, and I want to end your suffering. No, not like that. With meditation in my new podcast, Mindfulness for Gamers. Each episode, I'll take you through how mindfulness can help you to feel less anxious and frustrated and put you on a path of happiness, all through the lovely, grimy lens of video games. So make time to level up your mental health and take the first step on your spiritual skill tree. Join me and subscribe to Mindfulness for Gamers right here, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to The Review of Death, a Doctor Who podcast, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews, starring myself, Matthew Toffolo, and...
Starring.
I don't know why I said starring.
That was nice.
Yeah, do you like that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's lofty.
Featuring.
Yeah. With special guest appearance from
Billy Garrett
John.
Yeah.
Hope you're all doing well out there. We've got a lot to talk about.
We do.
In this episode.
There's a lot going on.
So what we've decided is we're going to front load this with the Attack of the Cybermen review.
Yeah.
And then for those of you who don't want stuff spoiled.
Spoilers.
Or even, you know, people that text you about speculation and stuff, then we can save it all for the second half. So you can wait until then.
There'll be a definite cutoff where you can go, I'm peacing out. I don't want to listen to this stuff.
But is there any other Doctor Who news we need to cover before we get into Attack of the Cybermen?
Well, obviously season 22 has arrived on Blu-ray.
Obviously.
Obviously, at the time of recording this, they've just come out, but by the time you guys are listening to this, it will have been out about a week.
About a week, yeah.
So that's really great. A fantastic looking set.
Yeah.
Lee Binding's artwork is just...
It's stunning. Always stunning.
Always amazing.
Does he do the ones in the booklet as well? Because
those
ones.
He does all of it.
Fab.
Yeah, really great. So that's a very packed... And
it's stacked, yeah. There's lots of stuff in there. I've watched most of the bonus features on the first three discs, I think.
Right. Have you watched the In Conversation with Colin yet?
I have.
Is that any good? I've not listened to it yet.
It is. It is really good. It is good. Nicholas is very interesting.
Right.
I haven't watched much of Michael Grades. I just wanted to, like, do the first 15 minutes where you tell us why you cancelled it and why you hate us so much. And then I can give or take listening about your life story.
Fair enough.
But yeah, Nicholas is very interesting. There's a real conversation about the control that JNT appeared to kind of have over her.
Mm.
And that, you know, he wanted to discover her and break her out as a star.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, she says that he didn't know until when, I'm not so sure, they're not too clear, that she wasn't actually American.
Right.
Colin didn't know for a year. Or so that she was. There are a lot of moments when you watch it where you go, "What is going? How on earth has that happened?" It's really interesting, though.
So did she audition for the part? The part was an American.
So she
was
told apparently that only Americans and Canadians are being considered. So
right.
All Americans and some Canadians.
Right.
So that's it. There's no British people putting on accents. That's it. So when you go in there, you have to be American. And so even when she's interviewed at the time, she's got the accent and she says, well, I've, you know, spent a lot of time over there and stuff, you know. She's really trying to not lie. Because what a dreadful thing to do.
Jesus.
You know, lie to loads of people about, you know.
Because I watched the interview she did at the time for Attack of the Cybermen. Mm. So whenever that went out, what year would that have been? 85?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, I wonder if she's speaking with her American accent. And it seemed like she wasn't.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it just, I don't know,
I think
cleared.
She tells a couple of stories where she spoke to John in her natural accent.
Yeah.
And nothing was kind of mentioned. So they all must have known. But she's under the pretense that a lot of people didn't know.
Wow.
But she still gets a lot of work, you know, asking for Americans in stuff.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, good American accent.
It is. It's a very good American accent.
Yeah. There's a few lines where you can hear the English coming through. I think particularly in like Planet of Fire.
Yeah.
Where she's obviously just getting to grips with it.
I would be more tempted to say of her, though, that she's like a Brit that's lived in the States for years.
Then
she sounds fully yanked up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.
Hey.
Hey up. Good on you, Nicola Bryant.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good box set. I was going to bring my beanie to add to the set now.
Oh, that's your famous beanie. We should have interviewed it.
I know, we should have. If you want an autograph, then send a £20 note in an envelope and I will send you an autograph from the beanie.
Other things, we've got the 4K release of the Dalek Peter Cushing movies.
Which was screened at BFI.
Yeah, neither of us went because we didn't. But
you've got the Blu-rays though.
I've got the collector set, which is fantastic.
Is it? Tell us about it.
It is so good. It's like reflective metallic material. Mm. It's really nice. It's the same height as the collection sets. They knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And two booklets inside, one which is just loaded with pictures. Another one was written by a man who is a bit of an asshole. Have you seen this going around on Twitter?
Yeah, something about Colin not getting a lot of love in it.
Yeah, he made a remark about something like, you know, you love Tom Baker and you love David Tennant, but you're not mad enough to love Colin Baker dressed as a clown. It's like, why the fuck would you write that?
Then
B, why would Studio Canal allow that? Clearly no one read it. Clearly they were just like, yes,
well,
fine.
Because everybody knows that the Cushing movies are real Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And all this other stuff on the telly, we can take the piss out of it in this video. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
It is a bit weird. So that's a bit annoying. But then it's got like some lovely art cards, lovely posters, the original one recreated, and then the new sort of cover art version, which is great
as well. One,
yeah. And then, wasn't a cartoon? Like if they did the third film
Saturday
as an
cartoon.
Animated.
Well, this is something else that came up at the BFI.
Yeah.
Apparently, I think, was it Milton Subotsky's kids?
Kids, yeah.
Turned up with a script for an unmade third movie.
Yeah.
Based on The Chase.
No.
No.
This, well, I don't think so. Is this not the one that was got two doctors
in it? Oh, yes, sorry, of course. Yeah.
Two doctors. And Milton Subotsky wanted either Tom Baker or John Pertwee as, like, the older doctor.
So this would have been in the 70s, this movie was tagged then?
No, I think this was 80s.
Oh.
So it was, like, 86, I want to say.
Bonkers.
So John Pertwee or Tom Baker as the older doctor, and then any old bugger who could act as the youngest doctor
I wonder if he saw Never Say Never Again.
And yeah.
He's like, well, they could be two Doctor Who's at the same time. You never know. Or three, as the case may be.
But he apparently liked Pertwee and Tom as the Doctor. I mean, who doesn't? And that was the plan. And it was going to be Doctor Who's greatest adventure. And I can't remember what the... It was a monster movie, I think. But I don't know how that would have all worked.
I cannot wait for somebody to do an audio adaptation of that.
I wonder who will do an audio adaptation of that.
That would be really cool to see, though.
Yeah.
Like, just to see the script and to see how it was written as is.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, what language were they using for these doctors? Like, is it going to sound like Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Or Twee and human? Or is it going to be slightly more, you know?
I mean, I guess it was thought of that it was canon to, well, I say canon, like canonish to this TV series, because obviously the idea of regeneration's in it. I guess it has nothing to do with the Peter Cushing films. It was purely, this is a spin-off of the Doctor Who show proper.
Mad.
It's weird, really weird.
I mean, he had the pedigree. Maybe he thought he could talk the BBC into it.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, there we go.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And then the only other thing I can think of that's happened is Doctor Who Redacted finished.
Yes.
Which I haven't started or finished
yet. I listened to the last episode this lunchtime, actually.
And what did you think of the whole thing overall?
It was fine.
It was fine. Okay.
I know people, some people...
Because you're quite high on it to start with.
I thought, well, this is really good. This is a really interesting thing, having this group of people producing this podcast, and you sort of explore the world of Doctor Who as if it was real life, listening to a podcast. So that was great.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it then left that sort of format and went just down the realms of this is an audio drama.
Right.
And which is fine, but for me, it felt too reliant on cameos and Russell T Davies Doctor Who references.
Okay.
And I don't know, it just sort of lost its way, I felt, a little bit. Mm. I think 10 episodes was maybe too long.
Mm. I was surprised it went on for that long.
Yeah, and then I wasn't really sure what was going on at one point, and then I sort of got the gist of it, and I don't know, the resolution just felt like a fairly Doctor Who-y resolution. Mm. We'll just do this thing, and it will save the day. But it was fine. I mean, I like the characters were really good. I did like the three leads. I just don't think it needed to be as long as that. And I think it needed something else. I think the cameos just got a bit like, okay, who's in this? I literally would go to the cast list and go, who is in this week's episode? Right. We've had Rani from Sarah Jane Adventures in this episode. We've had Mr. Nightingale from Blink in this episode. We've had this character from Bloody Partners in Crime.
Wow.
This person from Smith and Jones.
Bonkers.
And then, like, in the finale, the bloody Delta Wave augmenter was referenced. I was like, that's a Russell thing as well, isn't it? And it's just like, Madame Vastra turns up, not played by Niamh McIntosh, which was the weirdest thing. Because they're like, you're not Madame Vastra.
That's
I know her
so
voice.
Strange.
Yeah, apparently they couldn't get, well, I guess they just couldn't get hold of her.
Wow. Why not recast the character then?
Well, but they did. They recast it with somebody else.
Oh, have a different character.
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't. They wanted K-9 as well at one point. Mm. They replaced it with a different character.
Interesting.
I'm sure John Leeson was very upset.
Because, I'm sorry, gutted.
Know, this is bread and
butter. He couldn't do his rehearsals where he's walking around on the floor. You know, he can't help out on audio in that same way.
Yeah. there's a joke in there somewhere about John Leeson being on the floor.
Is there?
In a studio with three women. But,
Sorry, I thought we were talking about in Doctor Who and acting. They're like, you can hear some lapping in the corner of the room. It's, oh, John's just gone to his bowl. Sorry, everybody.
So that was it was good. Mm. Jodie Whittaker was good. She turned up at the end.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Sounds like a Flux review. Started really, really well.
Yeah.
And then kind of lost its way at the end.
Yeah, I think I think I would have just really rathered it be a story with a little narrative going through it, but every episode was framed as an episode of a podcast, but set within the Doctor Who world.
Yeah.
And like, oh, what is it this week?
10 episodes, though. I can see why they wanted a break out of it, but also that's the thing that made it interesting and different.
Yeah.
So, tricky.
Because then it just felt like another audio drama, It just needed, from Big Finish Presents, or whatever it is they say these days.
Yeah. We love story.
No,
what no, is
it's
it?
Not that.
We...
For the love of stories.
For the love of God.
Yeah, for the love of God, not another spin-off.
Right. Let's talk about Attack of the Cybermen.
Bow-now-now-now.
That's a very good interpretation.
Thank you.
So, Attack of the Cybermen. We watched it together.
We did.
For this, which is the first time we've done it for years.
I've never done it with you.
That's true. Well done. And it was...
Contrary to what everybody else believes. In the comments.
It's a funny story. I feel like it's one that a lot of people laden with this whole, it's too continuity heavy. Everybody who isn't a Doctor Who fan says it's too violent.
Mm.
There's not a lot of love for it when you say, Attack of the Cybermen. But when you actually look at individual components of it, everything works quite well in isolation.
Yeah, it's one of those stories where, kind of like Revenge of the Cybermen, it's a bit of a, I don't want to say a comfort story because it's a bit too grim to be a comfort story, but it's...
Very much so.
I would say it's easy viewing. Mm. It's one of those stories you can just put on and just let it wash over you.
Yeah.
But I watched the documentary for this, and Matthew Robinson, the director, was going, and Nicola, and I think Colin as well, they were all going on about how complicated it was. They're like, oh, there's so many layers. And I was like, what?
It might be as complex as Colin's Doctor Who gets.
Yeah.
But, give them the script for Ghostlight and see how they feel.
Oh my God, they wouldn't have had a clue. Yeah. It's sort of like, well, it all ties up pretty neatly. You know, everything makes sense.
Yes. I mean,
it's a slow burn, I think, is the
thing. It is a slow burn. The only thing I don't really get plot-wise about it, or that I think isn't signposted too much, and I need signposting in plots, is Halley's Comet. Seems like the only thing that sort of... I don't see how any of that connects to this.
No, so I think Halley's Comet was due to come into orbit, wasn't it, in real life, so that's why they incorporated it. Wasn't it just considered an omen of disaster? it was no enough disaster for Doctor Who. Clearly. They got bloody cancelled.
Clearly. Clearly. God, if it hadn't shown bloody Hayley's Comet at the start of the season,
yeah,
we'd have been reviewing Mission to Magnus sat here now.
Yeah. Oh, fuck me.
I know.
That's an appalling story.
It's a shame, because Philip Martin would otherwise have a pretty good track record of stories.
I know. When I listened to it on audio, and I was like, how did the man who wrote Vengeance on Varos write this?
Even Mindwarp. That's a good story.
Yeah. But this, Mission to Magnus was just utterly appalling. It was like something from the 60s.
You feel like that's a home run, really. Cybermen and Sil. Ice Warriors and
yeah,
Sil.
Yeah, yeah.
That, for some reason, just works aesthetically, yeah, doesn't it? But
I think that's it. As a target novelization cover,
it
you
looks
think,
great.
Whoa!
Don't open it, though.
No, because it's all about bloody Battle of the Sexes.
Yeah.
And this is, why
some,
are you doing this now in 1980s?
There's actors in it as well that aren't particularly good.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that always drags it down.
Another dotty old Time Lord.
Right.
He was like the Doctor's bully at school.
Yes. At the beginning they have a chat over
I mean, which is kind of fun, but you sort of feel like after the Twin Dilemma and then the Rani coming back and it just feels like, how many more bloody Time Lords
exactly.
is he going to bump
like
into?
It's not like Aimee's not kind of skulking in the shadows all the time anyway. You know, waiting to whip off a fake goatee to reveal his real goatee.
Which is also fake.
Much like his wig.
Put a wig on his wig.
Indeed.
But we don't talk about that.
Let's move on quite swiftly. Written by Eric Saywood, of course.
Yeah. Or is it?
Well, yes it is.
Contrary to Ian Levine's.
Yeah, there's an authorship debate that Paula
Moore
is in the credits.
Yes, that was somebody else that he got to put their name on it because he wasn't allowed to.
An old girlfriend of Eric's, I think.
Yeah, so he wasn't allowed to write it because he was already down to write the finale.
Exactly.
Very good story, Revelation of the Daleks. Well, I love that.
I was going to talk about this actually because Earthshock, Resurrection, Attack, Revelation, he wrote Frontios as well?
That was Bidmead.
Bidmead.
He did Visitation.
Visitation, thank you. They're all, besides Visitation, kind of one type of story.
Yeah.
You know, that each story has a real sense of foreboding that sort of hangs off of it. And I think Eric Saywood does that very well.
Mm.
It's very bleak.
Yeah.
And I think that Doctor Who should be bleak sometimes, because I think that's one of the scariest elements it has to it in an cosmos that you can travel around.
Yeah.
Not everyone you're going to encounter is going to be lovely.
No.
And it's likely it's space adventure series. Yeah. As he said in interviews that are on the Blu-ray, it's a space adventure series. People just will die.
Yeah.
And I don't think it happens. Oh, I don't know. Does it happen? Is it too gratuitous at this stage? Do you think Eric is too gratuitous with it? Or do you think it's because we know that he pens those kinds of stories?
I mean, he does pen those kinds of stories, but then I guess, like, if you look at season 19, that feels like a fairly balanced season. I guess he's not... Is he script editing part of it, isn't he? He hasn't done all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
towards the end...
Earthshock.
You know, Earthshock is the big, like... You know, that's his flag that he's planting in the sand. Like, this is my sort of story. I mean, I love The Visitation. I think The Visitation is a great Doctor Who story.
Absolutely.
And it is very much a bog-standard Doctor Who story.
Historical as well, so it's more kind of confined.
Yeah, and it's great, and I love it. And I think the Pterodactyls are fantastic baddie. Why haven't they been brought back?
Pterodactyls? Don't know.
They've got a real good, interesting culture, because everything's about beauty, and their androids are beautiful.
Yeah.
They're glammy. Androids and glam.
With all the plastic sequins glued onto him.
Cricket gloves.
Croc glues.
So it's then, I think, season 20 that...
Well, season 20 feels like a write-off for him creatively anyway, because he's been saddled with...
The Black Guardian.
Well, let's have an old villain in every episode or whatever.
Yeah.
You know. And obviously that doesn't quite happen, but he's got... It's like Trial.
Yeah.
He's got a story to focus on or a thread across the season to focus on.
So, yeah, I guess 21 is...
Where he actually gets to...
Really... is bleak.
Yeah.
Because Warriors of the Deep is bleak.
Mm.
So bleak.
Yeah.
And then Awakening doesn't really make an awful lot of sense.
It doesn't register.
No. Frontius is, again, very bleak, but a good story. Then Resurrection of the Daleks is, of course, incredibly bleak. Planet of Fire is just shit.
It's too boring to be bleak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's bleak that it got made.
Yeah.
And then Case of Androzani is very
incredibly bleak.
And then Twin Dilemma, which is...
like they've gone, whoa, Nelly, yeah. Have a bit of this if you like your bleak. Have a look at this costume. And that's when it starts to, you know, square peg,
yeah,
round hole
it
type
is.
Thing,
it's
isn't
really
it?
Really very much that.
But which is really odd because you kind of... I love watching Six and Perry because whenever they're on screen, you kind of feel like, oh, this is holding everything else kind of together. It's when they're kind of separated.
Yeah.
And you have to examine bits of the show that they're trying to work on or develop. And you think, I don't think anybody's got a hold on this show.
No.
Eric doesn't want to be there really anymore.
No.
John's not interested in stories.
No.
There's nobody there to support the characters.
Yeah.
But then in this, we've got a pretty great ensemble of...
this one feels...
cast members.
Much tighter. I mean, I think like later in the season, some of the... the bickering between the Doctor and Perry, that does start to drag a little bit. And then when you get, you know, the trial season and you have that lovely moment where they're just walking through the woods arm in arm and you're like, oh, this is what it should be. But this one does feel a bit tighter. I don't know if it's because he's penned it. I don't know. And I think actually the two Doctors, there's not really much bickering going on in that one, is there?
It's more of an exploration for Perry, this story.
Yeah.
Because it's like, right, now I can actually kind of start to get to grips with this new person.
Yeah.
And the Doctor's got a new thing to face that doesn't involve regenerative trauma and trying to strangle every 20 seconds. So when they actually do have conversations, like when she's talking about his memory having been through the meat grinder and he's talking about Zodin and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It feels very padded.
Yeah.
But because it's those two, and they do have a good chemistry.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because they talk about the fact that they didn't really see eye to eye when they started. Mm, there was kind of like, emotionally, they were kind of missing each other.
Yeah.
And my God, I mean, Colin had just lost his baby.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's amazing watching this season now, especially those early ones, and thinking weeks before he starts recording this, he's just had the worst thing possible happen to him.
And then, you would... what a bloody good actor.
I know.
You just don't see it at all.
No.
Absolutely incredible. Gosh, that poor bloke.
You couldn't let it register on you.
No, and I guess for him, kind of like with Tom, I guess, you know, Tom found Doctor Who an outlet for his depression, I guess. If you want to put a label on it. Mm. And I guess maybe that was the same for Colin. Unfortunately for Colin... it didn't have the longevity or that security that, you know, he probably hoped it would be.
I think Matthew Sweet kind of references that, actually, along those lines.
Where
he says, like, so when the call did come and it said, you know, we don't want you on the show anymore, by comparison, you know, didn't really seem that big a deal because you've gone through this level of trauma already in your life.
Yeah.
But that he didn't get to fully... express himself in the show, or you know, maybe the show was a kind of therapy, or, you know, that's not for us to speak on, but
no,
I totally see what you mean.
Yeah. Gosh, yeah, I didn't realize it was that close. I didn't really know when that happened.
His conversation with Matthew's really good, but he goes into a lot of that, and he gives him a lot of space to talk about the death of his son, and it's really, you know, very affecting. And I think even Matthew Sweet says it. You think, I think you need to reevaluate it when you look at that season.
Yeah.
Because I know, you know, it's difficult to disassociate the personal context from what you're seeing on screen, especially if you're critiquing it or you're trying to view it through a critical lens. But you can't ignore that.
No.
And I think that it's good that people are more aware that that was happening at the time.
Yeah.
I think it might make people a bit kinder about that whole situation.
Yeah. I mean, I think regardless of that, I've always thought Colin's Doctor was excellent.
Yeah.
You know, I've always loved his performance. You know, he gives it his all, you know, and he's immediately the Doctor, even though he has all these, like, you know, the weird turns or, like, the slips of memory.
Mm.
The performance is there.
Yeah.
And I think people see a dopey costume and therefore think dopey performance. Mm. I mean, imagine if you put David Tennant in that outfit.
Yeah.
How would people have reacted to David Tennant? Well, they'd have thought he was an absolute arsehole, wouldn't they? Well,
they probably thought he still looked fit, so, you know.
But even dressed like that?
Yeah.
Do you reckon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Colin still looks all right in that.
He's a good looking man.
I mean, how does the costume work for you in this context? It feels all right when it's outdoors. I think under a studio environment, it's slightly different.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I don't mind the costume.
No.
I do not take offence to the costume as much as some people do.
Yeah.
Was it the right choice? Absolutely not. It was insanity. But I think maybe the concept had legs.
Definitely.
Of like, you know...
Two.
Yeah. The two big pinstripe dresser ones. But yeah, it was just like a lot of things in this era, things aren't executed particularly well.
It just goes too far. It's just that costume. I mean, there is a, you know, I could see him wearing some extravagant, ridiculous thing.
Mm.
But all of that together at once.
Yeah.
In that cut, even the way it hangs off of him. It looks like a party costume. It doesn't look like a well-fitted, tailored outfit.
Yeah.
You know, Peter's looks a lot more, you know, clingy in terms of the fit. And maybe that's what Colin wanted at the fit of it, but it looks like somebody else's clothes on him.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, and it's a shame when you see him in the Twin Dilemma trying on these other outfits and you're like, you look really good in John Pertwee's velvet.
You do, let's have a bit of that.
You would have rocked a velvet frock coat.
He would have.
You know, it could have been a brighter colour, perhaps, but you would have looked good in it.
Or just one colour for each item.
Yeah.
Yellow waistcoat, orange trousers, blue jacket, green cravat, and that's fine.
I mean, look at the curator outfit that he's got in Stranded.
Yeah.
That works so well,
works
you
fine.
Know.
Yeah.
It's a bit out there, but it's not out there enough that you think, what the hell are you...
What on earth have you got on?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Very quickly, number one single.
Oh, right. What year is this? 1986?
Is it six?
I don't know. I could be totally wrong.
Do They Know It's Christmas by Band-Aid?
Fuck me, really?
There you go. And number one at the cinemas is Ghostbusters. I think it's not the first time we've had that.
Yeah, maybe with Twin Dilemma?
Well, probably. I guess, Makes sense. Makes sense. The Sixth Doctor, well, we're on The Sixth Doctor. He beats the shit out of that copper.
He does, that's amazing.
He's quite hands-on.
Yeah. He's and a big bloke.
He's
Why
a big
he be?
Bloke, he is. But... I mean, that probably talks, you know, to a wider context about the violence that's displayed through this season.
Yeah.
And in this story in particular. I always feel with Cybermen stories and violence, they kind of go hand in hand with each other. So, I know obviously Lytton getting his hands crushed at the end, particularly, that's the kind of visceral, violent moment. But beyond that, especially when it's laser bolts.
Yeah.
You kind of think... How are people watching this and thinking this is too violent?
Yeah, I mean, it's sci-fi fantasy violence, isn't it? You know, it's, you know, compare like someone getting shot in this to like Kondo getting shot in Brain and Morbius, where his stomach explodes. You know, that is violence and gore.
Absolutely.
A Cryon getting blasted by a Cyberman is nothing.
Especially when the effect is all digital as well.
Exactly.
It's not visceral. It's not in the kind of
And the same
scene.
With... Style is it Styles? No, Bates and Stratton.
Bates
you know,
and Stratton.
When they go to the time ship and they touch the door and he gets electrocuted. Mm. Again, it's sci-fi death. It's not anything.
It's like Tom and Jerry.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah.
You know. So I don't know.
What does it feel like to get killed by a plasma electric shield?
Yeah.
Like fucking anyone knows. You know. So.
Exactly. So yeah, I don't buy that really.
Bates and Stratton, I think they are, for me, I know I saw some people talking about them on Twitter yesterday, not being particularly fond of it or seeing it as real obvious padding, and it kind of, their story does feel like padding, especially considering, besides Lytton and Brian Glover's character joining them later, there's no kind of weaving of the narratives at all. I think that I love their story.
Yeah.
And I love it from the second you meet them, through to finding out they're part cyber converted,
yeah,
to the whole let's dress up as Cybermen and try and get into cyber control.
Yeah.
Because that's very Doctor Who. That's like putting Ian inside the Dalek.
Yeah.
It's so, you know, and you can imagine trying to get away with it. And,
yeah.
You know,
hell, right, if they can do it, if they can do it in bloody the new Cyberman, the latest Cyberman story, which one was that? Where Yaz and Fahim.
Oh yeah, Yaz gets in that whole outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least these were like half Cybermen already.
Exactly.
They're already 6 foot tall.
But even right through to the end where they get fucking killed.
Yeah.
I love their story. I know it's depressing.
Yeah.
But I think you need, especially against the Cybermen, because they are so cold and emotionless.
Yeah.
When people die, it should be like they just almost got there. And it's so gutting, but it's like just the right reaction you want.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody watches it and goes, bollocks, you're so close.
Yeah, Maybe the problem with it is that it's the season opener. And the season opener opens on such a... crikey.
God, and they had Twin Dilemma before as well.
Yeah.
What an introduction to Colin, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, no. He was sort of not helped by that choice of episode order.
Let's think about this. Like, let's look at season 22 as a whole.
Yeah.
And think, how else would you order it? Well, I imagine maybe the two Doctors is quite a light story to an extent. It's obviously scary with Shock Eye and stuff. But, you know, there's a slight levity to it in parts, which maybe it's quite sunny and bright. Perhaps that would have been a better season opener. But, of course, then you've got Pat Troughton in Colin's second story, which seems like a bit of a...
And it opens with a different Doctor in the TARDIS
as well.
Yeah, so
that's a bit weird. Time Lash is just shit.
You wouldn't put it anywhere.
You know, that shouldn't have been committed to celluloid, let alone written.
I think Revelation needs to be at the end.
That needs to be at the end.
The finale, because it feels big, doesn't it?
Vengeance on Varos is also very dark, very bleak, which then just leaves us with Mark of the Rani.
Which is so light.
Yeah.
It floats away. Yeah.
You wouldn't necessarily put that as the opening story.
I don't think it's all that bad, actually, having the two Doctors at the front.
Do you not?
Because it's almost like more anticipation building up for seeing the Doctor.
Yeah.
I think you've got enough separation with it going from black and white to colour.
Mm.
So maybe two Doctors, then Mark of the Rani. Put Time Lash on second to last so that you can wash the taste out of everybody's mouth.
Wouldn't it have been ballsy if they'd have used Pat Troughton's title sequence as well for Two of the Doctors?
Oh, that would have been great.
Imagine that. Imagine tuning in whatever year it was.
Or you just contain it to the space station and the whole of part one is all in black and white and it's all Pat and Jamie.
Yeah.
And then it intersects with Colin and it's all in colour.
That would have been cool, wouldn't it? Oh, there's an edit that needs to happen.
Just a black and white edit of that first part.
Yeah.
All in the space station would be really cool to see.
I've
got a note here, just a separate thing. J&T asked Colin to play down the role of Commander Maxil. So at this point, I've moved on to watching the special features.
Yeah.
So during the rehearsals, apparently J&T said Colin's performance was a bit arch, as he put it.
Right.
And he says it's not the Commander Maxil show.
Yeah.
It's called Doctor Who. But I think it's interesting that he pointed that out, considering he then goes on to become the Doctor.
Mm.
So I wonder if all the stuff about, oh, I was at a garden party and I was just on fire.
Yeah.
And he thought, you're a good Doctor Who. I wonder if that's the seed that's planted, because his character trait is dominating the scene.
Yeah.
Dominating an environment.
Yeah.
And he does that in this story a lot. Mm. And so you think, oh, that's what you saw.
I'm thinking of like Tom Webster's impression that he did for us.
Oh yeah.
And it was, it is that big
Yeah.
I think that is his Doctor in a nutshell. I mean, he seems, you know, as a man, Colin seems quite a down to earth, normal bloke.
But he does like to entertain.
Yeah.
So it's perfect marriage, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know. An intergalactic showman.
Yeah.
And he's got that kind of... It's a warm, showy, dazzling kind of thing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's great.
He's good.
I love Colin.
Me too.
And I'd also like to talk about David Banks very quickly.
Yes.
Obviously.
Of course.
And I think his performance, especially in this story, is really... It's interesting to watch compared to the previous stories he's been involved in, because he's not so much the focus here.
Yeah.
I know he's kind of cameoing in the Five Doctors. Earthshock, obviously. he's front and centre, main baddie. But he plays second fiddle to another Cyberman in terms of hierarchy in this story. And if there's any more obvious divide, or maybe a reason why you shouldn't lean so much on nostalgia just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Because surely when Michael Gareth came in, they went, oh, maybe we just get David to do it.
Yeah.
You know, because also, why do you have a cyber leader and a controller? Like, surely the leader at that point, to most people, supersedes the controller.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're going back to Telos.
And that's what Eric Saward said. He was like, it just makes no sense. Especially, like you said, you've got David Banks, who just was so fantastic in that part.
Mm.
Why would you think, fuck me, Michael Kilgareth didn't even say the lines in Tomb of the Cybermen.
I know.
What's the point?
And you think he's a good enough performer. And then when he talks, it's all very, I'm a robot. And I also went to RADA, you know. And it's all, oh no. And every Cyberman, he runs a terrible ship there in terms of the quality of the Cybermen.
They are.
Everyone, a ragtag bunch of losers. All these Cybermen with bits hanging off of them.
Gaffer
and
tape.
They're really excitable. Oh, the one who's trying to do a Mark Hardy impression.
Yeah.
It's like when you're trying to do an impression of Mark Hardy, you know, like it's not going to pay
off. I think I must have put something in here about how absolutely appalling they are. But it is ridiculous. You've got that one who doesn't know how to walk in the background. He's like, oh, shit. I've forgotten how to walk. So you've got him. You've got the other one. Hello, controller. With the gaffer tape on because his helmet wouldn't go on his head for some reason.
Yeah. Why do you cast people with tiny heads?
Yeah, I mean, surely one size fits all. Come on. Obviously, Michael Kilgareth is just... You know, there's no way of going around it. He's overweight. And then his thing's too short, his bloody flight suit. So they've put bloody silver gaffer tape round his bloody wrist. I mean, and throughout all of this, JNT's turning around to the bloody guys working on the Cybermen suits and saying, oh, paint Michael Kilgareth's helmet silver because I don't want to see the brain like they did in Tomb of the Cybermen.
Sorry,
you're worried about his bloody brain case not being silver. Look at the state of him. It's like a cosplayer.
It does look like a cosplayer.
It looks like a cosplayer. They all do.
Is this where the rot sets in for the Cybermen? Is this the first story where you go, oh, shit.
Yeah. They had such a high. I mean, like, they're great in The Five Doctors as well. I mean, I know they get their ass kicked, but they're still good.
But, and interestingly enough, on this set as well, when they talk about, look, the love wasn't there, the money wasn't there for the show.
Yeah.
Whenever that is ever mentioned, it's always a clip from Attack of the Cybermen that comes up. And it's always the bit where he's blasting them.
Yeah.
In cyber control.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, it's not the worst. It's the staging of it that looks crap.
Yeah.
That the actual, that's not a money problem. That's just it's been, you know, not that they're running out of time or the creativity and the direction of that sequence isn't great because it's all bumping into each other. And
yeah, I mean, the set is literally a corner.
It's tiny.
It's teeny tiny.
And that is the, and that's the whole of cyber control is that bank in the middle.
Yeah.
And then six Cybermen along the wall, partly converted.
And then,
three milling around.
It's so ridiculous when they come in and it's Domino. It's like, shoot David Banks. Or I'll bump into this one who shoots somebody else. It is, you put the Benny Hill music over it would fit. It is ridiculous. And I mean, I think all the stuff with the Cybermen in the sewers is fantastic.
Very good.
Moodily shot. You know, what I like about these Earthshock Cybermen, these 80s Cybermen, is that they work just as well as like marchy action Cybermen, as much as they work well stealthy in the shadows, because there's that they're very slender and is a good silhouette. But then as soon as you get into cyber control and it's all brightly lit and stuff, and then you can see the faults in the suits, which are starting to show a lot of wear and tear, where they've not only been used for episodes of Doctor Who, but then they've been out on
location
and, you know, other
stuff.
Yeah, publicity, all that stuff. So they're starting to look a bit tatty. David Banks' suit looks pristine. He looks all right.
Because he probably looks after it. They probably all take them home.
Yeah.
And he's the one that cares about his job the most. So his handles always come in shining bright and clean.
Yeah. And then I do love that one that is the cyber lieutenant but isn't Mark Hardy. It sounds like Mr. Blobby.
Yeah.
He lies, Luda.
He's not to be trusted. And it's always like, you little grass.
Yeah.
Just trying to suck up to the cyber leader. Oh, Mum told me if I really impress him, I might become cyber leader too one day. Yeah, can you imagine that the sewer scenes where they see the stealth cyberman? What the hell is it? But it's a cyber swan.
Yeah.
And it's that one, they can't sneak up on you, can you?
Exactly. And I think
Chong.
You just hear him coming.
Yeah,
marching through shit down at the end of the sewer.
Bollocks. Yeah, I mean, that's the bit on the cyber controller that I've just written the cyber controller.
I mean, I think fair play to Michael Kilgariff for thinking, all right, these are robotic characters, so I will try and give it a slight robotic intonation.
He's doing something different, but it's not. It's very separate from everybody else.
That's even the trouble.
Even the Cybermen that aren't as good as David Banks, they're trying to do David Banks, or they're trying to do what has happened recently.
That's the trouble.
Whereas he's come in and he's beep, bop, boop.
Beep, bop, boop. It would have been so much better if they'd have just got David Banks as the cyber controller.
Mm. Or have a cyber planner and have it be more of like a kind of...
An entity rather than a cyberman.
Exactly.
But it feels like a short... It feels like David Banks drew the short straw because he wasted him.
Yeah.
Wasted him. So good. Poor bugger.
They never know what they've got until they lose it, eh?
That's
they
it.
They never know.
Yeah.
Terry Molloy. Terry Molloy is in this.
Yeah.
He is part of that
playing
ensemble.
The most unconvincing gangster.
Undercover copper.
He has Narc written on his head.
I know. He's got Narc written on his head.
It's so ridiculous. You know Lytton's just like, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
He knows.
He doesn't fit in with that crew at all. I mean,
no.
Lytton is the kind of obvious outsider of that whole group, but he's the leader and he's got, Maurice has got such an amazing... Lytton is a great character.
He's fantastic.
One of the best characters to have come out of the show from the 80s, for sure. And so great they brought him back. They obviously saw a cachet in Lytton as a character, and bringing him back here was great, and the policeman as well and all that. But you're right. It's nice seeing Terry Molloy without...
It is nice seeing...
Prosthetics.
I think all of his scenes with Colin, all that humour in the sewers, you know, that works really well. That's great. And it's not, it's nothing against Terry Molloy. Mm. It's just, he just happens to, he's, everyone else, I think I said this when we watched it, you've got the bald guy, whatever his name is.
Brian Glover,
he's got his tough Yorkshire accent, and then you've got, oh, that's the other bloke, oh, that's not very...
Kind of ratty looking
they're all like that. And then you've got Terry Molloy. Hello, I'm Terry Molloy.
Hello, I'm terribly well spoken.
Yeah, and it is...
Does anybody know where I could buy some drugs? Anybody know of any crimes happening?
Yeah. Hello, I'm an out-of-work criminal, and I would like to do some crimes.
Ignore the wire that's sticking out of my jacket. Yeah. Where does his body go, though?
I know!
He gets twatted by a Cyberman in the most wonderful bit of overacting you'll ever see. He obviously... Okay, so Terry, so the contact needs to happen here because we can't really frame it well enough with the Cybermen coming in from that angle. But you need to end there.
Mm.
So can you cover that 20 feet in a really overdramatic pirouette dance?
It's a shame he's not shot. Because if he was shot, you might think, oh, well, the force of the blast might have propelled him.
Yeah.
But a little tap on the neck, which apparently breaks his neck. Like, it's not, it's like, yeah, it's weird. It's like more on the shoulder, but somehow it still kills him.
It's great.
But it's so powerful that it literally obliterates him out of existence.
I assume he's taken off to the back rooms of the TARDIS so that Sixie and Perry can drop him off at Tranquil Repose.
Yeah.
Where he can become the great healer.
I know.
Whoa. I've just blown that way up right there. I'll write a faction paradox.
Either that or there's just a corpse of...
He's rotting in the corridors. Somewhere. The Ninth Doctor opens a cupboard one day and goes, oh, yeah.
Four, what's that bong? The trains have gone again.
Rose, it's the last time you have a curry with Mickey and then come on board, I tell you that.
Oh, dear. Who's Mickey? Can't mention him anymore.
Oh, yeah. I think that the Kryons have a part to play in this story not being that well fondly remembered. It's all because it's very stick that in front of Michael Grade and he'll go, get that cancelled now.
Yeah.
It's the wrong part of Doctor Who to be showing off at that time, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Sarah Green is part of the ensemble and she doesn't add an awful lot to proceedings. Should talk about Ghostwatch.
Ghostwatch, yeah, very good.
Go and watch Ghostwatch if you haven't seen Ghostwatch.
Yeah.
It's really good. And you get to see Sarah Green in...
playing Sarah
acting
Green.
Kind of relatively well compared to this.
Well, I guess that's it. I guess she's playing herself. So
she is. She knows how to do that.
She's just doing her job.
Exactly.
Really. She's just being her presenter self. Whereas, you know, in this...
That's the tricky thing. You look through Spotlight and there's very few people who come from Telos.
Yeah.
You know. Have you at least met a Cryon? You know.
I think the other ones are good.
Yeah.
Like the Leeds one, played by someone fairly famous. I can't remember her name.
That's either Rost, Threst, Varn or Flast.
One of them.
Yeah. Is this the one that Colin has said back and forth? They have a great chemistry.
Yeah.
They've got a great thing happening on screen, those two.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're great. I like them.
Sorry. I was trying to think of some ridiculous rude joke to do with Cryons and the... I don't know.
Bit cold in here, is it, Doctor?
Yeah. Ooh, frostbite on your dick. That's the last
let's
thing
not. Let's not. But let's continue talking about ice. The ice tombs of Telos.
Oh, they look shit.
Designed
they look proper arse.
Fucking flat pack furniture. They look like toilet cubicles.
Oh, they are so appallingly awful.
And they looked at them and looked at reference photos and said, oh yeah, the tombs of the Cybermen, that looks great. And then somebody went, let's not do the brilliant, iconic design that is still referenced. I mean, when they came back in Nightmare in Silver, the set had tombs references all over it.
Yeah.
You know, why? It's so counterintuitive.
They just look like little cupboards with like doors on. And it just.
What I imagine it would look like now is in New Earth, when they've got all the tanks.
Yeah.
So I kind of imagine that if you pan the camera around, it would just be 100 yards of nothing and it just goes down and down and down into the planet's surface.
It needed a good model shot, really.
Yeah.
Like the Tomb of the Cybermen. I mean, obviously I know they built a full scale-ish one, but it needed a good model shot to say, this is where we are.
Mm.
I think that's the problem, that there's the lack of foresight that it just doesn't set up that world very well.
No.
It just feels like a studio.
Yeah, it's very one level.
Yeah.
Which is odd because, you know, there are stairs and steps and and they're shooting them low.
Yeah.
But it's not enough.
It doesn't give you scale at all.
You need, like, the start of the level below.
Yeah.
As part of the set that you occasionally see. Or
Yeah, because otherwise
like
it just feels like, oh, okay, there's like 12... Cyber tombs, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's 6 Cybermen in Cyber Control. They're obviously not able to convert that many at any one time. So,
I mean, that is something, although it's not really focused on too much, the conversion process. This is the first time we really get to see Cyber conversion going on. And it looks really horrible.
Mm.
And it looks great, you know, just to see these poor buggers lined up with all this stuff going on.
I think that the... It works nowadays having it as more of a butcher, scary, knives are going to come and chop you up, like in Rise of the Cybermen, Age of Steel. Because that scares kids more than assimilating you know, a lengthy conversion process where you're pumped full of chemicals and have your skins flayed off and all that kind of stuff.
Enema.
But, cyber enema. Bend over. It's just... I like the stuff coming out of them.
We're talking about the enemas.
I like all the stuff that looks like an old PC. You know those old ribbons that you connect to things and they're kind of coming out.
Yeah.
That looks cool. I don't quite get the evolution of the design from that kind of quite sleek handlebar thing they've got going on.
To the big...
To actually looking a lot more cumbersome. Mm. Like it kind of looks like that's a new evolution of Cyberman.
Yeah.
If it would be nice, I guess, obviously, with Bates and Stratton and the people working out on the planet's surface, you do see more of a connection to what they eventually look like post-conversion. But it would have been nice if there were just a couple more references to the eventual look in the way that they designed.
Yeah. And I do like all that stuff that, you know, Lytton says about, you know, the chemicals are affecting my brain and all that sort of stuff. So it gives you a little insight of like what they're actually doing.
And his voice
has
started to change as well.
Which is cool.
And he's so gaunt and withdrawn. And you kind of think at that point, it's like, okay, so the fleshy body part has been switched off.
Yeah.
So it's just the mechanics and the electrodes and stuff that's keeping him alive.
Yeah.
I think that room must stink.
Yeah.
It must be horrible. I wonder if they just go, oh, that one's not worked. It's perished halfway through. And they just, like Tracy Island, they flick a switch and they just disappear into the wall.
And then
come back in and put another one in. There we go. Connect them up. Anything else?
Anything else? I mean, I don't know. Like I said.
The score?
I know some people moan about the score.
I love it.
I like it. Yeah. It's a memorable score.
And it's got all the bits. It's got all the bits from Earthshock that you want.
All the tracks you love.
Beautifully. All beautifully reused.
Yeah.
You know, even if you hadn't seen that the episode was called Attack of the Cybermen and you had a really bad quality image coming through and you just heard the blom, 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 like just in the sewers, you go,
I love that.
Hang on a minute. That sounds like the Cybermen. And I love that idea that you could have a theme and you don't see the villain on screen, but you're sort of alluding to it.
Yeah.
And then you maybe hear strings and you're like, oh shit, that's a Dalek sounding motif or whatever. I love that sort of thing in Doctor Who.
It's great.
It pays off.
It does,
It's like
it?
Satisfying. You're like, you're ahead of the game. Like, oh, I know what's going to happen.
Yeah. It's cool. It's a shame, really, that they called it Attack of the Cybermen.
Yeah.
I don't know what else they'd have called it.
Thoroughly depressing.
Thoroughly depressing. Going back to the Kryons, they were all written as men. Do you know this?
Were they?
Yeah, they were all written as men, and they were supposed to be like little gruff, little ice men.
And then they were like, but then that would mean Nicola is the only woman in the cast.
Yeah, so
which happens a lot, actually, in this season.
Yeah, and it was Matthew Robinson who went to JNT and said, why don't we cast women as the Kryons? Because then you've got the femininity versus the masculinity of the Cybermen.
And that's a cool contrast.
And that really works.
It does.
I think that's a really good idea. Eric Saywood wasn't too happy about it. He didn't think it made much sense because he said he thought that the Kryons were the sort of creature that would break a nail and cry. His words, not mine. Perhaps the design of the Kryons.
I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
If they didn't have helmets.
Yeah.
With those kaleidoscope things in their eyes, which I see what they're trying to do.
Plastic moustaches.
Exactly. But it's not, they're doing the kind of half mask thing.
Yeah.
But it's not like with a draconian where it's all just one part of the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, so what, do they take that off then? Like, if they look like human underneath it anyway,
then
might as well just paint them.
I guess they
blue.
Were trying to make it seem like their heads were made of ice. But that gives it a very helmet-like feel.
It does.
It's really weird.
I did think, what if they were just humanoid-looking?
Yeah.
And the Cybermen kind of... Because it seems like if the Cybermen wanted to wipe them out, they probably could.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they, you know, we tolerate them, but if we see them, we'll, you know, we kill them. But,
yeah.
You know, we know they're down there, but we won't wipe them all out. But if you had them more humanoid...
Yeah.
But it's just that the conversion process doesn't work with them. That would be more of an interesting dynamic. Mm. Because then you don't have to worry about dressing them up as aliens.
Yeah.
And making it look really cheap. Like, even if everybody's face just has like a slightly bluer complexion.
So
it's like everyone's body temperature, if you're a Kryon, is just lower.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah.
You know, but... You know, and if you get put in a cyber conversion chamber, you just turn into a puddle or some shit, you know. Can't get the electrodes in.
Yeah, and I mean, I love all that stuff about them, you know, sabotaging the tombs so that all the Cybermen are decaying and that's why it stinks.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and they unfortunately...
Yeah, there's like...
Nuggets of things, you're like, that would be really good, more of that. It's a shame.
And then when you see, like, Kryon Control... And there's like three of them in the foreground, and it's a big set.
Yeah.
It's a surprisingly big set considering you see it maybe four or five times.
Meanwhile, the cyber controller is stuck in the corner.
I know.
TV one or whatever.
Bumping into things. And it's just like, that seems odd that they'd, you know, give that set to the Kryons.
Yeah. And the tomb set is like, we'll give it the tomb set.
I know.
It feels tiny, but we'll give them this big space. Yeah, they seem like they're miles away, those Kryons in the background.
It might be really. It might be a weird
perspective
or something. But then, yeah, when you kind of, when all they're doing in the background is just kind of...
Yeah, and just pressing buttons. And, yeah.
There's not an awful lot of affirmative action.
Which we should have had our nails done for this one.
That
would
have been good. Which at least if they had this... at least when they pick up cyber guns and they get a bit involved,
yeah,
that's all right. Because you're like, oh, they can hold their own.
Mm.
But then it's quite strange seeing this ethereal thing wandering around with this massive gun.
Yeah.
It's, but that's, you know, that's Doctor Who. It's odd and it's, you know, those two things don't match and that's what makes it cool.
Yeah. It's all right. It's a good, it's a fun story.
I don't think it deserves the hate it gets.
No.
I think it's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I don't think the Cybermen come across well in it, particularly.
No.
They have their moments. And this story, every element that... you know, is at play, has a really standout moment.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't, it doesn't last for the whole...
No.
The whole thing. And as soon as you get to Telos, I think it kind of loses its way.
It really does. It really does. I just don't think it's... The planet is not set up as well as it is in Tomb of the Cybermen.
No.
Which is the problem.
Well, we're just told we're going to Telos. It's the home planet of the Cybermen.
Yeah.
And for people who haven't been to Telos since Tomb of the Cybermen, which I imagine is a lot of your audience, might have been nicer to set it up a little bit. I like the wastes of Telos.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, and the desaturated colour.
Which looks great.
Yeah.
Because when you see the photos of the quarry,
it's so orange,
it's so sandy. It's it's so bright. But the desaturation really works because they're supposed to be walking corpses, Bates and Stratton and everybody else. So, you know, it really works. But it's just, it just kind of... It runs out of steam. It runs out of ideas. You know, by the time they get to Telos, it's just, right, well, we need to kind of resolve this now.
And what's the plot? What are they doing? What's their plan? They've got a time ship.
They've got a time ship.
And they want to go back in time to stop Mondas from being destroyed.
Yeah.
How? Oh, is that what Halley's Comet's for? Are they going to plow... Are they going to redirect it into Earth or something?
I don't know. They have a thing about statues in the 80s.
Yeah.
Nemesis is going past. Quick, let's invade. Quick.
Yeah, they really did. I love this idea that this is all going on and meanwhile at the South Pole,
10th
planet ones are turning
up. Yeah, exactly.
That would have been so cool. Imagine those two meeting.
Call yourself a continuity advisor, Ian Levine. If you knew, you would have, you know, come on.
Yeah,
how could you pass that one up?
That would have been really cool if they'd have got some 10th planet ones in.
Yeah. Because you'd save money.
Yeah.
And they look purposefully crap.
They could have done Twice Upon a Time-ish. Like 40 years early.
Well, the show wouldn't have lasted as long if they'd done Twice Upon a Time in the 80s.
But, oh, God, I mean, it would have been good, wouldn't it? Imagine, like,
The
sing-songy Cyberman meeting David Banks. Excellent.
Is Herndl, has he passed away by this point?
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe get him.
Oh, my God, he could have done it. That could have been the two Doctors.
Yeah.
Attack of the Cybermen.
I like the two Doctors, though.
That would have been quite good. It could have been like a Trouble with Tribbles Star Trek thing where they can't, you know, they can't meet each other.
Yeah.
You know.
One on Telos, one on Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been
and
cool.
And never the two shall meet.
Yeah.
And they've, you know, maybe the Sixth Doctor goes to the South Pole and is like, oh, you know, I will disguise myself. I'll put the hood over.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Or he's on Telos and he's like, right, that's everybody dead. And the First Doctor appears on the screen and says, fucking hell, I really have turned into a clown, haven't I?
Yeah.
Jesus, where's the fucking dandy when you need him?
Yeah. Well.
There we go.
I think that's Attack of the Cybermen. It's fun. It's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. Go on.
Is it better or worse than Silver Nemesis? My nephew was asking me this the other day, and I said I prefer this to Silver Nemesis.
I think it's probably a better story than Silver Nemesis.
Yeah.
But if I had to choose one to sit down and watch, I'd choose Silver Nemesis.
I said Silver Nemesis is more fun.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think Attack, it's a bit too heavy, and I don't really like the 45-minute format.
No.
Especially at this period in time.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for me. I much prefer to watch 3 25 minutes.
Yeah.
That to me is like, oh, yes, that's so much more palatable.
Cyber Scouts are cool, aren't they? Black Cybermen.
Yeah, that's the, like, they're in the TARDIS, they're in the sewer, and they're also in cyber control on Earth.
Yeah.
But they don't appear again once they... Or maybe there's one at the end of the... By the gates. Maybe there's one skulking around there on Telos.
Yeah.
But it's funny they've never come back.
Like, no,
they're
really cool.
To have them come back.
Yeah.
Because it's just another thing that the Cybermen can do.
Yeah.
You know, you can't really have stealthy Daleks, you know.
But... I like that board meeting. So, what shall we do with our new design? Well, we could paint ourselves black.
I think we'd look quite good in black.
Yes.
Yes. The purple design last week didn't quite work out.
Mr. Blobby Cyberman was like,
Oh, no.
I thought it was a good idea, either, but...
You sound like Mulligan and O'Hare.
In our homes, in our special drawer, we keep all the items
we adore.
Yes, in a sterilised cabinet, they are kept...
And the surrounding environments are regularly swept.
If that doesn't send people off to the break with a smile on their face,
yeah.
I don't know what will.
Folks, welcome to Dungeons and Randomness. Since 2012, myself and an amazing cast of 18 have been telling stories in our homebrew world of Theria. Four different groups explore lost ruins, run for political office, rage against a mad king, set sail to long forgotten islands, and so much more. Every group has a different story and flavor, and every season or arc has a new set of groups and stories, all building the history of our world with every single session. Literally hundreds of hours of stories are waiting for you as part of the Pickaxe Network. Check out Dungeons and Randomness wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you around the table.
What are we talking about now? Speculation!
Spoilers and speculation.
60th anniversary. Billy has come cosplaying David Tennant on the front cover of this month's
clearly,
PWM.
That's very well timed, isn't it?
It was. It was really good. Yeah, so for those of you who don't want to hear this stuff, Go away now.
Go away now, because we're now going to talk about spoilery things.
Yeah. So it's all, nothing will be untouched in this segment.
Yes.
So
we very luckily went down to the filming, because Doctor Who was filming in Bristol.
Yeah, literally right around the corner.
Right around the corner from where we are now. And we were there on the Wednesday. Which was all filming happening, basically involving David Tennant and
Catherine Tate
and Neil Patrick Harris.
In the present day.
Yes. It was all modern day stuff. So what we saw was a bunch of members of the public running around,
yeah,
fighting each other, scrabbling over toys, fighting over toys.
I think that was the suggestion, that there was something to do with toys. And yeah, they were beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah. And and people were kind of like ramming each other in cars. And
yeah,
all that sort of stuff. Cars on fire, lots of smoke, lots of chaos. And in the middle of it is Neil Patrick Harris, and he's sort of doing a little
dancing
bit of a
around,
twirl.
Yeah.
And there's...
A bit jokery.
And there's confetti that's gone off and is falling all around, and the Doctor kind of runs up to him in this chaos.
Yeah.
And they exchange a couple of lines of dialogue. There's one take where they dance with each other.
A little dance, yeah, and then they... Yeah.
They part.
Tenet goes off, yeah.
And then...
I hope they keep that in, that's good.
Yeah. And then he wanders off, I guess. It seems like a very short scene.
Yeah, but a lot going on.
A lot going on. Go on.
Interestingly, someone caught the clapperboard and it said episode 3.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that gives us...
At least 3 episodes.
The big rumour was that this was going to be 3 episodes.
Yeah.
So this could be the finale that we're seeing.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Neil Patrick Harris was dressed in tails and a top hat and
yeah,
had dark hair, as opposed to the publicity image that was released where he was looking much older.
Yes.
Meanwhile, around the corner from there, the following day, which we didn't go to...
No, but we saw it.
But we saw it, yeah. They had the toy shop,
yeah.
Neil Patrick Harris's toy shop.
Mr. Emporium.
Yeah. Did you see... Well, there was a sign up that said...
Mm.
I didn't see it there, but I saw pictures afterwards. There was a sign that said Toy Maker of the Year.
Yes.
But did you also see the clown
I
face?
I did see the clown
yes,
face,
which
yes,
was clearly the clown from the Celestial Toy Maker.
Very clearly. So the Celestial Toy Maker's back.
Yeah, we think so.
The big bad for the whole...
Well... Interestingly, because you should bring this up, because in this month's DWM, Russell says in the article, let me find it for you here. Russell says in the article, what is all this about with David Tennant coming back and Donna coming back? Is this a unseen adventure a la, you know, Big Finish or, you know, Missing Adventures? He said, oh, maybe it's a multiverse thing. They're all the rage these days. Maybe this is a Doctor and Donna from Universe 557, all set to collide with our own. Then again, maybe, just maybe, this return is so impossible that it's actually an intricate illusion created by an old enemy of the Doctor's, or maybe an old enemy of Donna's. So he does say in this article that some of the things that he puts out here are true, but it's down to you to work, out what they are.
To work out what it is, yeah.
So perhaps it is that. And I think I said to you, wonder if the reason why the Doctor looks like an old Doctor, but not quite the 10th Doctor as we know it.
Is that there's some kind of illusion that's being played.
It's the toy maker at play.
I was thinking that when I came in earlier, because I was thinking about his costume and the really the much nicer photos that we have of it now, courtesy of that, because it was, you know, blazing hot sunshine.
And
it was, just see the costume just right. It does kind of feel like if somebody was to do a kid's version of Doctor Who, and you were to dress the Doctor up, it's like the comic book colours of like Bart Simpson in the comics. It's like a slight, it's not quite right.
Yeah.
And it feels like there's a distinct reason for that. And if it's, he's, I don't know, stolen Jodie's face, you know, or made them invisible, or, you know, I mean, obviously, William Hartnell, the original intention to write him out was going to be in the Celestial Toymaker.
Yes.
That he would just reappear after being invisible with a completely different face. Which would have maybe made the show slightly more difficult to keep bringing back constantly every 3 years with a new actor. But it kind of ties in with all this stuff of it's not quite the 14th, but it's a Doctor.
Yeah.
You know?
And his costume feels very Doctorish. It's like, I think it feels probably more Doctorish than his original outfit.
I would agree, because it's like a costume. It's more like a costume than a guy in a suit.
And it feels like, oh, you know, what if someone who was possibly a fan of the Doctor, and maybe that's what they're doing with the Toymaker, you know, maybe he's like, oh,
maybe,
you know,
I always wanted to be like you,
sort
of thing.
You know, and I always liked that one. I've been watching your exploits, and I liked this one. But I thought you were a bit drab in those pinstripes.
I thought I tarted up a little bit. Yeah, that's cool.
It could be anything
like that.
And tartan
just suits you for some reason. Yeah. Something like that, I can see that. There were a couple of interesting things to kind of point out from that first bit of filming, which I wrote about in a Patreon post that I put up, which was the end of days person with the board on them. That the board said the end of times.
Yeah.
Which seems so pointed and specific.
Yeah.
And immediately in my head there and then I was like, that's the name of the episode. So I'll put a fiver down on episode 3 being called the end of times.
He also had a sign at his feet that said the end is nigh. But obviously that one is, obviously the one that he's got front and centre is
center.
Very...
It's quite
on the nose,
obvious,
is it?
Isn't it? I mean, it might be a nice little
Easter egg
or whatever. Yeah. But then, it seems quite pointed to be right in the middle
of that
scene. Because where they were positioned was, if he was shooting at them, David and Neil Patrick Harris would have basically been either side.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So the second day they filmed with the toy shop set in the past, 1925.
Yes. Is that the exact date we've got now?
That is what someone in the crew told us. And then someone else worked out from something that was on set that it was 1925.
I said 24.
Oh, did you?
And then so I'll take that.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
So that was all set in the past. And we've seen Neil Patrick Harris in his toy maker garb looking older. I wonder if, because obviously the Celestial Toymaker is just an entity, kind of like the Great Intelligence, isn't it really? It's just a power.
Yeah.
I wonder if it just takes over the form of this elderly-ish Toymaker, and then it makes him younger and more vibrant and
so
gives him vitality,
you
know, perhaps.
Because he's very oddly made up.
Yeah.
I kind of thought it was a bit of a... He's covering up what wrinkles he has left, which are just natural.
I mean,
because he wants to be, you know, immortal or live forever or have that kind of thing. But the makeup's quite a specific job, it looks like.
So I thought it was kind of like Because he's in the Tales and he's in evening wear.
Yeah.
He feels like, I can't remember the name of the bloody guy in Cabaret, who's the MC.
Right.
You know, and he's the master of ceremonies, and he's in a very similar outfit, and he's got that makeup. It's sort of stage makeup, where it's
fine.
A bit, you know, slightly effeminate, but, you know, it's so, you know, everything registers to the audience. So I don't know. It's just, there's a lot going on. Will we have a musical number?
Wow.
I mean, he's got Neil Patrick Harris in. He's dressed as an
MC,
a showman. If he doesn't do a little song and a little dance, I'd be shocked.
I like
I'm all for it.
I like the aesthetic they're going for with his tails and his... The whole aesthetic of it is like Russell's taken stuff that he's seen that he's missed because he's not been able to do a Doctor Who pastiche of it. And this kind of feels like, let's do The Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
But make it Doctor Who.
So...
He's like a toy maker that gets possessed, and he's very showy and theatrical, and it's the perfect time to do it.
Yeah.
Perfect period in history to do it. Perfect actor to get to play that kind of a part.
And I like, if we, for the sake of argument, let's say that this is the finale and that everything is a big plan of the Celestial Toy Makers. Mm. Fine. And then if we say episode one is Beep the Meep, because Beep the Meep.
We'll talk about that as
which
well.
Which we'll talk about in a minute.
And episode Wrath Warriors?
Wrath Warriors,
I've only ever seen it written down, obviously.
Yeah.
So.
and then episode two is something else. Maybe, perhaps, well, Russell's like, well, you know, we can't bring all the Doctors back, but we can bring back other things from Doctor Who's past to celebrate 60 years. So, you know, there's obviously a lot going on in this one. We've got UNIT back.
In every episode, by the looks of it.
It does seem like it, doesn't it? And then we've got UNIT back. We've obviously got Donna and her family back and, you know, the Russell T Davies golden era stuff coming back. But then maybe they're like, well, we'll just bring back the toy maker and we'll bring back something that is old but is new for television, like Beat the Meat.
Yeah.
And then whatever episode two is going to be.
It feels like a raiding of Doctor Who's history
at
that point. When you start getting Beep the Meep and the Wrath Warriors on screen, it seems like a kind of... Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, you know, maybe a conscious effort to, like, let's not do the Daleks.
Yeah.
Let's not do the Cybermen. Because, fuck me, they've been done so many times. Also, they're in the centenary.
Yeah.
We don't need them.
They didn't feel like there was a weight of having to have those characters in the show when Russell was doing it.
Yeah.
It only really feels like an obligation. I mean, and I know the whole Terry Nation thing, or Daleks a year, or whatever that whole thing is. But even with characters that don't have some sort of imagined or real stipulation, it does feel like an obligation when you see the old monsters.
Yeah.
Like, let's cut them out again, because it's Doctor Who, there's got to be a Cyberman story at some point. If you don't have something for them, and it's going to make them look weaker, then why not just, if you, and maybe you do decide to go crazy. Maybe you're like, well, let's not come up with something original just for this one.
Yeah.
Let's do an old Doctor Who monster, but let's really find something interesting that's never been done before and that couldn't have been done at the time or whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what the excuse is.
Mm.
Do we think that's going to be the case across all of the specials? Or do you think we'll have, like, because I wondered if it's print media in the first one.
Yeah.
Audio in the second and something else in the third. Or it could follow a structure like that.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't know what would you bring from the audios into...
The Scorchies. They would work great with the toy maker.
The Scorchies, they would work great, actually. I'm trying to think of, like, good...
Charlie
Pollard.
And, obviously, Lucy Miller.
I mean, Lucy Miller would be amazing because obviously Sheridan Smith
is a good bit of guest casting.
Is
anyway.
A star name.
Yeah, yeah.
She could sing as well. So if it is a musical,
true,
she can do. She can do.
I think we probably need a couple of lifts or computers played by Nick Briggs in there somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's.
The Virons and the Rocket Men are like the ones that everybody says realistically.
Yeah.
They're the ones that would probably translate best to screen.
Yeah, the Virons are cool, but I don't know. If for an anniversary, but then again, I say this.
And beat the meat back.
So let's talk about that. Yeah.
I love the fact he mentions it in here. Like, well, you know, there's public filming. It's likely this stuff's going to get papped, and it's got something to do with DWM.
Yeah.
So you know,
he basically his head.
There is no mistaking it.
Yeah.
Beat the Meep is going to be in Doctor Who for actual realsies.
Yeah.
Which is just insane.
Yeah.
So if Frobisher doesn't turn up,
oh.
Frobisher needs to be in the
and
second.
And you think how good their animal CG is in
Dark Materials.
Dark Materials. Like, have a and, you know, proper he doesn't CG even, penguin.
He doesn't even need to be, like, necessarily realistically well, no. realistic, because he's obviously an alien.
They were talking about that on the Strip for Action Sixth Doctor
yeah.
set. They said they found it really difficult to give him any kind of an emotion when you draw him as like an
emperor penguin. Yeah.
So he has to have eyebrows yeah. and he has to be cartoony.
He's got cartoony eyes.
But yeah, just take the one that's on the cover of the Holy Terror and sort of make that a bit more high res.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Just put
just
a couple.
Do it. Just
yeah,
do it. Go
yeah,
on.
That's easy. Yeah, easy. I'm sure Clay's still got all the assets lying yeah. around somewhere. I mean, it's bewildering. Like, it's the most Doctor Who-y thing that you can imagine happening. Yeah. Like, of course they'll bring Beat the Meat back.
That's so good. I mean, I would love, but the thing that I would really love is for, if the Beat the Meat thing also turns out to be all part of this big ploy of the toy makers, I'd love for...
He's the big bad.
Oh, Beat the Meat.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, I'd love for the toy maker to be like, oh, you know, I just plucked bits of things from here and there and, you know, gets you a Doctor Who weekly.
Yeah,
here it is. This is I found this in another universe.
Yeah, what if this is the Doctor bleeding into like our reality?
Yeah,
and like actually, do you know what? If you were here in real life, this shit would go on. It's all crazy. People are trying to kill each other in the streets.
Yeah,
you know, maybe you deserve to live in your world of fantasy, your land of fiction.
Yeah, I mean, there's room for all that fun stuff.
But you know, it's so odd to be so far away, but know so much about it.
Yeah.
And obviously, by comparison, you've still got Jodie to come.
And we know nothing.
Well, no,
much.
But I think, and you'll know this, obviously, but a lot of people are complaining about the fact we know more about Russell than Jodie's stuff.
Yeah.
When that is purely down to, as Russell says in his production notes for this issue, DWM, we're going to be on the street filming.
Yeah.
It's going to get leaked. We need to get the information. We need to get the information out before it gets leaked.
Yeah.
Obviously, all the Jodie stuff is in the can. That still doesn't explain why we haven't got a fucking title.
I know.
Which is
a bit
mad.
I was saying this to Annie the other day, and it's like, maybe it's just going to be called the Centenary Special.
Why wouldn't you say what the title is?
It seems weird. It does seem weird. And I mean, I love the fact, God bless Russell, that... At the end of his little bit, he even says, but anyway, park that for now because there's a bigger story to come. The countdown to the Magnificent Jodie's final episode. An old mate, Chris Chibnall, makes me look like a fool when it comes to publicity. How much do you know about the finale? Nothing. Oh, you've got a glimpse or two in the preview at Easter. But believe me, you know so little. Get ready to be rocked. I'm not convinced we'll even reach Shooty, David and Catherine with the devastation that's about to be unleashed in the Doctor's greatest confrontation yet. He is doing Chibnall's job for him.
And my old mate Chris Chibnall makes me look like a fool when it comes to publicity. What are you talking about? Like, I get... If he said, makes me look like a fool when it comes to security, fine. Because he's clearly very good at keeping stuff under wraps.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't use the word publicity. I think that's a very pointed use of the word publicity.
I think that is a bit of a backhanded
it's got to
compliment,
be a dig.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Because I certainly wouldn't have used those words. So good on you, Russell.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I think it's lovely that he went out of his way to really hype up the finale.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Chris Chibnall was like, I've done it, I'm off.
It kind of feels like that. I mean, it's difficult because obviously it's all done and the production office is closed.
Yeah.
There's nobody working on that show that was working. Well, I mean, unless they've obviously moved over to Bad Wolf. But, like, that operation isn't happening anymore.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. But I know what you mean. And I think, yeah, there's a very pointed reference to publicity in there from Russell. Very nicely done. What else has come out that we can still discuss? I don't know if there's anything more. I mean, by the time this comes out, I mean, God.
Who knows what.
Everybody's going to be. Paul McGann's going to be in it and all sorts.
Yeah.
So.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I don't think we've talked about this, but we know that Rose is Donna's daughter.
Yes.
And obviously, we know Bernard Cribbins is back as Wilf.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, Wilf knows all the stuff about the Doctor.
If it is Wilf.
If it's Wilf, yeah. So maybe Wilf told Donna's daughter about the stories of the Doctor and Rose and all that kind of stuff. Maybe that's why she adopted the name Rose.
Maybe. Like pass it down as like a kid's
yeah,
story.
Yeah, like a little kid's story.
There's a line of dialogue that got recorded. I think it's on BBC Bristol's Twitter.
Oh, is this the Mel stuff?
Yeah. Like, I don't think she says Mel.
No.
But it sounds to me like she's remarking on taking a trip in the TARDIS for the first time.
Right.
It kind of, like, and David says, oh, she's great, isn't she? I wondered if he was talking about the TARDIS.
Okay.
But just because the way they're speaking.
See.
It sounds like they're, it doesn't sound, this is me reading into it massively.
Yeah.
From, like, you know, three or four lines of dialogue. So, but the way it's performed to me sounds like they don't know each other as well.
I mean, I read it as it's going to be something ridiculous. Like, me and Annie were having this exact discussion, when it came out and we listened to it. And we were like, well, it seems unlikely that it's going to be about Melanie Bush. Mm. If he says Mel,
yeah,
it's unlikely it's going to be about Melanie Bush. So I was like, it's going to be that very Russell T Davies thing of like, oh yeah, you know, I hang out with the Spice Girls. Mel was great,
sure.
You know, and that it's going to be something like that.
Yeah.
Or, oh yeah, I was on Bake Off and Mel and Sue. Yeah. Mel's brilliant. You know, it's that kind of Doctor Who-y 2005-y vibe.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be something daft like that.
Yeah.
Which then made us go, why didn't they do a Doctor Who Great British Bake Off?
I mean,
Colin Baker,
That would be great.
That would be amazing.
I mean, do you need it when you've got the cookbook, really?
No, but I mean, it's different
okay,
though,
Bake
isn't
Off,
it?
But just recipes from the cookbook.
Oh my God.
That would be great. And get them to make a really gourmet version of like the really horrible 80s ones. And let's see if we can improve this a little bit.
But yeah, I think Bake Off tent.
I wonder
Channel
how much...
Channel 4 allow that?
Yeah, I mean...
Or is there too much bad blood between the BBC and Bake Off now?
No, I don't think so. It doesn't matter. It's not the channel at the end of the day, is it? It's the production company
True.
That will commission it.
Yeah.
But I wonder how much cross-pollination there'll be between channels with Doctor Who happening in the 60th anniversary. Because you kind of feel like, yeah, Channel 4 could have like a... Even if it's like a TV scariest moments thing, you know, it feels... And with Russell being involved, you know, they want to kind of big up like, hey, Russell's done some stuff for us recently as well.
Yeah, and, true.
You know, it might be more of a all-in-it-together sort of thing. Like, did the Dalek movies get shown on TV during the 50th anniversary?
Don't know.
Seems like the kind of thing they might do, you know?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I guess that's it, isn't it? You know, there's going to be this... Everyone is going to want a piece of that pie. So, why not?
So, dig in.
Dig in.
Dig in, folks.
You've heard it here first. Doctor Who, Great British Bake Off.
It's
Colin
gonna
Baker,
happen.
Carrot King.
Sylvester.
You know.
That works. What would each Doctor... Okay, so what would Sylv have?
Something Scottish.
Something, haggis.
Haggis.
But you've got to butcher get the stomach yourself.
Yeah.
Go out into that field and there's a couple of cows in there.
So let's...
Or sheep, sorry.
Let's think Doctor. I mean, if we could get all the Doctor, as many Doctors on there.
Yeah.
Colin would do it. Sylv would do it, I'm sure.
Bill wouldn't because he'd hurt his teeth and he'd have to go off and get
Hartnell.
His teeth seen.
I was going to say, well, Bill's dead. McGann would probably do it.
McGann would probably do it. I think you want...
Matt, David, I mean, they'd all do it.
I wouldn't even have any doctors. I'd just have companions.
Really?
You'd
have to have doctors. You'd have to have the doctors. A Doctor Who special. All the doctors.
James Corden.
Fuck off.
Big names, though. Big names. Big names of the Bake Off. It's a charity one. They say it's Stand Up For Cancer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd get Tennant and Smith.
Tennant, Smith.
Capaldi.
Eccleston. Okay, let's just do it with doctors. It just makes more sense, doesn't it? It just makes more sense.
I mean, Matt Lucas was in Doctor Who and he's already hosting it.
Exactly.
So he's all right.
And Noel Fielding looks like he
should have been
in
Doctor Who at some point.
Yeah. That should happen.
Noel Fielding, yeah. Why has he not been in Doctor
That's
Who?
That's very strange.
As like some sort of like, I don't know, weird
ethereal
alien.
Sort of like space being that kind of comes in and goes, right, yeah.
Some kind of space crackhead.
We can only hope. Is there any more we can divulge in terms of things that have happened? I mean, the filming has gone quiet in the last week.
Yeah.
So you'd assume they're doing studio stuff.
Yeah.
And it's all obviously been quite, apart from obviously going back in time, modern day Earth centric.
Yeah.
So do we think if this is episode 3 they're shooting now, it might be like how it was structured back in the day, present day, future, past?
Oh, maybe. Oh, yes.
So the third one is mainly set in the 1920s with occasional flash forwards and stuff.
Oh, yeah, quite possibly.
Because I feel like you need like an off world.
Yeah,
otherwise
you're right.
It's going to be very Earth-based.
Oh, that yeah, I like that.
So maybe, I don't know, where if you were going to go somewhere recognisably Doctor Who, a planet from the show's past.
Peladon.
It could, I was going to say it could be as obscure as you want, but yeah, Peladon would work really well. Maybe we have a Peladon story for the 60th anniversary, episode 2. That would be really
cool. Agador comes back.
Yeah, that would be great.
David Tennant doing Haroon, Haroon, Haroon.
I don't want anything else now. Yeah. So we'll have a modern day sort of Beat the Meep invades the Earth, you know, and that'll be the central episode 1.
That brings everyone together.
Return to Peladon.
Yeah. I guess that's it. Rose finds Beat the Meep. I think that seems to be the idea that she finds Beat the Meep. It's like Sharon does in the comic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like a crash ship and she goes out and finds it in the field from the location filming.
And then maybe it's like, well, you know, Donna, your head should have exploded because you've just seen me, but you haven't exploded. So what's going on? Come with me in the TARDIS and we'll go off somewhere.
We're being dragged off to this planet. We'll get back to Earth.
Yeah, we're caught in a tractor beam of a nice warrior's spaceship. Yeah. Oh, we're on Peladon.
Yeah.
It's Brexit on Peladon. It's, I don't know, any of the mad fucking shit that's been happening in British politics on Peladon.
All of it.
All of it.
I think, you know, there's the whole thing about, hey, Russell's going to be, he's going to have some axes to grind.
Yeah.
More axes to grind than maybe he did back when the show, when he was running it, because there was a Labour government in charge, and so he's probably got quite a bit to say.
Mm.
I'm looking forward to the shooty episode about strikes and unions and stuff. Very, very cool. and Shooty's off filming.
He's doing
all sorts.
Well,
of stuff.
He's filming Barbie.
I'm filming Barbie, yeah.
But he's just posted on Instagram that he's dyeing his hair black.
Oh.
So does that mean he's getting ready for his
maybe
close
like
up,
a
Mr. Davies?
Yeah. I wonder if he is in the 60th, if it will be like a quick hop in, hop out. I mean, he'll be in situ by the end of the third episode.
Yeah.
You'd imagine. But maybe if they film anything with him before then, could he be in popping up in each story?
Oh, it's so weird, isn't it, that we don't know what is happening? There's three specials with David, potentially three specials with David Tennant.
Yeah.
And then when does Shooty come in?
When does he start filming?
Does he come, like...
If they did something mental and went, right, so all this stuff we're doing with David and Catherine, it's all for 2023, but we've got a Christmas special with Shooty.
Shooty, yeah.
And it's at the end of the Christmas special where things go a bit haywire. So you kind of have your twin dilemma.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you've got a bit of David and let's do the nostalgia thing. Let's not seep Shooty in sort of like continuity and all that. And let's just have him come into the role.
New era, breath of fresh air.
Reset button, big fat reset button, and just turn the universe off and put it on again and see what happens. I think they could do something like that.
Yeah.
How would you feel if at the end of the third episode they go, maybe you can pretend that it's all still happening back in Universe A, but what if they go, let's go to Universe B and let's do Doctor Who there and just start from scratch?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd like that.
No?
No, I'm not sure.
Do you not feel like with all of the Pandorica eating half the universe bollocks, or, you know, like the half the universe being reset and the flux and stuff, do you not feel like things have just got a bit too big, but, and that you want to maybe scale things back a little bit?
It's Doctor Who, though, and you just have to remember that if you forget about it, everything, the status quo is back to normal.
No, I know. And that's different for, like, an invasion of Earth, because we've all programmed to go like, oh, okay, fine, well, we'll forget that the Yetis invaded in the underground and the Cybermen are here, oh, what a surprise. But, I mean, even in the Matt Smith era, Stephen Moffat was writing lines of dialogue like, I've drawn too much attention to myself, or I've got too big.
Yeah.
And you feel like maybe he was trying to do that, actually. Yeah. Because there's a lot of the Daleks forget who he is.
True.
And there's the big reset of the Big Bang. Weird. And all that bollocks.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe that there is something there to work with and that Russell would pick that up.
Mm. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. I definitely think that maybe, like what you said, David Tennant and Catherine Tate are there to do the nostalgia thing, and then Shooty can come in,
yeah,
and it can all be fresh and new, and you know. Mm. But yeah,
it's a brave new world. It's very exciting.
It is. It's really exciting because no one knows what the Smeg's going on.
Exactly.
But
but then we're also seeing quite good location photos.
Yeah.
Which makes it more confusing, because we have no context for what's going on.
Yeah.
And every time something happens on location, it throws another spanner in the works.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh my God, so now there's this as well?
Yeah.
That's happening? But I guess we'll just have to see how it all develops. Yeah. And we'll stick to it as closely as we can, obviously with a sort of two-week buffer between each episode. We're probably going to have to play quite a lot of catch-up. But it means we'll have a lot to talk about, I suppose.
Yeah, that's good. Which is good. And that, yeah, that'd be fun.
So let's sign off with this.
Max. Oh, yeah. So these Iron Brew sweets that are kicking around in the office, which are meant to be sour as...
a cat's arsehole.
I wouldn't know, Billy.
I wouldn't. I've heard. Right.
Is it really hard? You're going to rip your teeth.
The first thing I say is these things are designed to rip your fillings out, but...
Mm. Oh, my God.
Right. Only 10p. That's pretty good.
Well, it needs to be 10p because you're going to be spending half your money getting your fillings replaced.
That's true. Nah. That's weak.
It's not sour at all.
That's not sour at all. What a letdown. See you in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
Well, bye.
Bye.